Wait a minute, what am I doing? Two men in a what? Two friends from film school, one who graduated, one who did, and they decided to make a podcast. Okay, this has never been done before, right? Okay. This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.
No, I'm excited. My sabbatical starts tomorrow. If you're listening, book me on shows, please. I have a handful of dates booked, but I always love more. But I bought a set of 5 and 10 pound weights, and in the back of my car is a walk pad. I'm going to walk when I watch movies and shit.
I have nothing against walk pads. I think they're a great idea.
Yeah.
But the one boss that I don't like, who's really into ChatGPT, loves walk pads.
So
I'm like,
I'm doing my best during the sabbatical to still like structure my day from like a 9-to-5 work schedule so that when I inevitably have to go back to my job, that it's not going to be a culture shock. Like, I'm trying to like figure out, like, instead of serving food, I will be working on projects and writing and like getting house stuff done. But
I mean,
also,
you can come
like,
serve me food. So you don't lose the skills. You can come cook my breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
I mean, maybe not breakfast, lunch, and dinner, breakfast, but lunch, once a week, if you want to like, if we want to like get together and do something, I'm totally down.
You can come do my breakfast, lunch, and dinner. You can cut my summer sausage and feed me cheese slices. That's usually my lunch.
Okay.
You can microwave my dinner.
Okay, but
you gotta wear the chef coat though.
That's
in the little hand.
Okay.
You come over and you're here for like 6 minutes and you just heat up my dinner.
But I'm trying to build a structure so that like my exercise and like some of my writing stuff is outside of the hours, so that when I go back to work, I can still do that stuff. So. My idea is if I regular small exercise throughout the week, and I pick like 1 hour during the weekend that I go to the gym, then my brain is not going to take that as this giant, like, what's the transition, I guess, like this like giant thing I have to commit to, because it's once a week. I can go to the gym once a week, but it's now like, it's like I want to walk when I watch movies, and switching to diet Dr. Pepper instead of regular Dr. Pepper.
So you shit out all the weight.
Honestly, a little bit. But
I probably lose like 5 pounds anytime I eat something with artificial sweetener.
Sucralose is better than aspartame for me. With that being said, they didn't have zero sugar Dr. Pepper. They just had diet.
All of it makes me shit.
That's fair.
Sometimes I consider, like I'm like, I wonder if I'm blocked up. Maybe I should, like, eat something. Maybe I should drink a C4 energy drink. I should take a day off work.
Yeah.
Take a C4 energy drink. Hire a pastor to pray for me.
I mean,
it's, yeah. Look, dude, it's, it, I, everyone in my family's a nurse. So I know a lot about butts and stuff. And this is unnatural. Like, I tried the C4 strawberry starburst drink. Fantastic drink.
Okay.
It's when it came out when I was working at Sheets. And I spent the entire shift, like, praying in the bathroom.
Yeah.
It's bad. I just don't understand. I feel like there isn't that much shit inside me. But then that happens. I'm like, you think I'd be out by now. It's been hours. But it just keeps coming. I'm like,
have you ever had to get a colonoscopy?
No.
Okay. Well, the day before, you're aware of, like, the day before they make you drink the... See, I have yet to have the clear, like, basically sweat laxative. My, when I had mine, they made me take a half jar of Miralax in a day, which is insane. It should be illegal.
It's just, I just don't. Because there's all those ads for, like, this mushroom drink will have you shit all the shit out of you because there's shit inside you and it's bad. And every time I see these, like, and it's like super overpriced supplement.
Yep.
I'm like, I could literally just buy like a Diet Dr. Pepper and have the same experience.
Sure.
Probably better tasting too.
Yeah.
I want to drink a mushroom.
They're too expensive. I have contemplated mushroom teas. I have a buddy who really likes them, and I was like, I'll try them sometime. And then I looked up like the prices, and I'm not spending $15 on a tea bag.
And dude, mushrooms.
Not a tea bag, but but like a box.
Mushrooms just grow outside.
Okay, but it's a different kind of mushroom.
I was recently at a reunion at a scout camp I worked at. And there were so many different mushrooms there.
Sure.
We were looking at so many different... One of them has to be the mushroom that makes you poop good.
Is it also the mushroom that makes you, like, hallucinates the wrong word, but, like, loosen up your brain a lot?
No, no, none of them were those mushrooms. They were more coral-based mushrooms.
Okay. They weren't psilocybin?
No.
Have you ever tried mushrooms?
No.
Me neither.
I don't trust the mushroom. I view it as a competitor.
A competitor?
Yeah. I don't trust the mycelium hive mind. They came from space, you know.
Sure, I gotcha.
They came from space, and then a monkey ate them, and that's what gave us sentience. It hooked us into the hive mind.
That is the theory, yeah. That monkeys found mushrooms.
I'm declaring war on two things on this planet, magic mushrooms and octopus. I don't trust either of them.
Okay.
I view them as a truly... like, everyone's like, AI is an existential threat to humanity. No, we make that. That's our child. These things, though. Alien invaders from outer space here to ruin us.
AI is also an existential threat to humanity. Because we made it doesn't mean
you
that it's
say
not.
That. You say that, but when we're fucking pushed back to what's really far inland, like Kansas, the octopi are advancing across our great country. AI is going to come through and they're like Terminators. And they're going to start shooting octopi, and we're going to have peace. I'm ready for the octopi wars, dude. I'm going to be in a big aliens suit, right? Aliens is the one where she's in the power suit?
Yes.
I'm going to be in aliens. I'm going to be in my big power suit. I'm going to be ripping octopi in half, punching their rockets out of the air. Because we were dropping all our rockets into the ocean, so we're just giving them free access. They fucking fight wars. And everyone's like, ooh, octopi are cute. I'm like, they're evil creatures. This is not a bit. I see an octopi and I see truly like evil. I do not trust an octopi.
I have not researched enough to have formed such an opinion. With that being said, you're not the only person I know who doesn't like octopi.
Are any of them like hot single women?
No.
Yeah, dang. Welcome to the Two Men in a Movie podcast, where each week one man shows another man a movie he can't believe he hasn't seen. As always, I'm your defender of humanity against the awful, nasty octopus, Matthew Olenchek, joined as always by my fitness guru friend and husband, Harrison.
I'm going to turn into a fitness guru.
Yeah.
I'm going to go from 350 to just fucking swole.
All you got to do is grow out the beard a little bit and start wearing a man bun and... You're going to be a fitness guru.
No, I hope not. I severely hope not. I'm there. How are you today?
Yeah, tired.
Me too.
Sunday. We don't usually record. The Lord's Day. Yeah.
Yeah, not anymore.
We'd have a pastor come over and like forgive our sins for working on a Sunday.
You were busy Wednesday and Thursday, which are our normal record days. And with me being off all week, like all month, I have Monday off so I can just get the editing done.
Yeah, I've been so busy.
Yeah.
I do contract work at the company we're contracting for. Lost all of its, removed our ability to use Microsoft Office products. I just came in, I'm like, why don't I have this? And so I had to spend like days with IT to get that back. Jesus. And I finally got back the ability to use spreadsheets again, the core principle of my work. And at that point, I lost access to our database software, which I had previously had access to, even while I had lost Microsoft.
Yeah.
So I'd be like, hey, now I've lost access to this. I still can do no work. So like the last couple days of the week were me like doing like 3 days of work.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay.
I'm off tomorrow. I can just edit this tomorrow. Are we officially committing to Tuesday as the new upload day?
Yeah.
Okay. Two Men Tuesdays. Yeah, we got some cool stuff coming down the line. I know we have the anniversary episode. We have all guests coming next month.
We're doing an episode where we review all like actual like recorded snuff films.
Yeah. No.
Like, what's her name? The journalist. You made a movie about her?
Oh, the
who... We won't be watching the movie. We'll be watching the broadcast. But...
Right, the who live on broadcast, like, shot herself.
Yeah.
But, yeah. This has nothing to do with the movie. You picked the movie this week.
I did. It's, I don't know. I was gonna say the year, but I don't know. I don't know the director either.
Rob Marshall, and I want to say 02.
Chicago.
Yeah.
You know, people are always like, bring back the 1920s, and I'm like, I don't get it. But then you know, you see Catherine Zeta-Jones in this film, and I'm like, you know what? Bring back the 1920s.
Is there a reason you picked this movie? Because when I texted you, what are we watching? And you were like, Chicago, the musical. You had never mentioned it before. It had never come up in any of our conversations.
Oh, it has to have. I've told you that for a long time. I had to have told you that I seen Chicago to make me want to be a lawyer. And that's why I didn't become a lawyer.
Maybe.
Because you should not see this movie and then be like, I want to be a lawyer. But watching this movie, I'm like, maybe I should be a lawyer.
Oh, sure. I liked this movie. I liked this movie like a fair bit.
It's really good.
It's pretty good. Is yeah.
It's one of the better musical movies.
It is, yes. It is. I have not seen the live stage production. It is better than the Rent, or I like it more than the Rent adaptation, which is a bummer because Rent is my personal favorite musical. So much that I literally have a Rent tattoo. I have one tattoo and it's a Rent tattoo.
Nah, they killed it with the casting alone.
Yeah.
John C. Reilly
annoyed me in the beginning and then like got me. I turned around on him very quickly.
I always say that he's one of the most incredible actors because on one end you got
yes.
Dr. Steve Brule and on the other hand you got him in Chicago.
Yeah. That this and the guy from Step Brothers. When was Step Brothers? Was this the same year?
Oh God, I hope it is.
Oh my God,
that'd be so fucking funny. I feel like
Step Brothers was that way. Step Brothers was like 4 or 5 years away.
No, he's incredible in this movie.
Yeah, he's really good. He has my second favorite number in the entire movie of Mr. Cellophane.
That's like the big breakout one. Like that was performed at like award shows and stuff. Like Mr. Cellophane's like the big breakout song of Chicago.
There's that Cell Block Tango is the one that I know
is really good.
It's probably my favorite. It's the one that I have seen the most, like on its own, both the movie and I've seen like stage versions
of
it.
I'm not sure what my favorite is. I think that was the one I'd most want to choreograph if I was doing production.
Have you seen Bob Fosse's All That Jazz?
No.
Okay, we might watch it next week. It's about. So Bob Fosse directed the original stage production of Chicago, and All That Jazz is about that period of his life, and it's the most self-loathing movie ever made.
I think All That Jazz might actually be my favorite. I really like an All That Jazz.
They really come out swinging. Like, I will give them that.
I do like Razzle Dazzle. I mean, I like all the songs in here. I like Razzle Dazzle. I like their Reach for the Gun. I really like what they did. Like, not from necessarily, like, what's my favorite song. I think my favorite adaption is...
They both Reach for the Gun.
Yeah, they really took advantage of what they could do with film.
Yeah.
As opposed to a stage show. Because, sadly... You can't make actors really big.
No. I mean, you could just have giant puppets, but sure. So, this is like the Bob... I don't know if he originated this, but this is like the Bob Fosse thing of... There's the movie and the stage production of the movie basically going on at the same time. And they intersect at various points to where you're never quite sure if it's like a... If it's like an Asteroid City thing where like you're watching the stage production, but you're watching it of like what's in the actors and directors' heads, or if you're watching two separate stories that are just intersecting. It's a really simple device that I've seen used a couple times, but I'm surprised does not get used
I also learned like the Phantom movie. I'm a big defender of the Phantom of the Opera movie.
The Joel Schumacher?
Yeah.
I have not seen it in 15 years, but I remember agreeing with that. I remember being a defender of that movie.
And it's... I can bring it on. I've seen it more recent. But, like, and that's very much, like, everything's in. But this has, like, the stage world.
Yeah.
Which I think works for the themes of the movie.
I agree. It does the thing that I don't like what movie musicals do, in that it casts famous people in the roles. With that being said, this movie works more often than it doesn't for that.
I think it really benefits from all the people that they cast in the famous people they cast in the main roles just being like good
sure
at doing a musical.
Yes.
It's not like Cats where you have like James Corden.
No. I think if you're adapting a movie musical and you're not going with the Broadway cast, you're going with like a completely new cast for the movie musical. One of two things. Either do what this movie does and just pick people for their solid ability, or what's the word? It's like typecast, essentially. Yeah. Like cast a famous person that you know has played this kind of role before, or completely cast against type so that an audience immediately knows what you're doing without like having to think about
it's
it.
It's like how like with the Wicked movie, which I haven't seen, but like I'm like Ariana Grande seems like a decent choice to me.
Sure.
if you're doing famous people, because that's a person I know who can sing.
I have not seen the Wicked movie. I am both fascinated and worried about Wicked 2. Because the first movie is apparently just the first act of Wicked.
Hell yeah.
So people are going to... The second act of Wicked is like the weaker half of Wicked, notoriously. So from what I hear from like reviewers or from people who like it, they're like, the second movie's not going to be great, but God, that first movie's good. Like, it's just like, we'll deal with that's future. That's future John Chu's problem. Good job. You made a good movie. Like, it would be like cutting this movie off at what's the number that comes after the lawyer? Like All I Need Is Love, whatever that number is.
It's not the Razzle Dazzle so much later.
No. Mr. Cellophane's later. But it would be like cutting this movie off when he agrees to represent Roxy. Is apparently what Wicked is. Also, Cell Block Tango is so much earlier in this movie than I remember it being.
Yeah, no, it's...
It's the 30-minute mark.
Well, because they gotta... Because it's... It's got to be earlier enough that they can... It's got to be earlier. Because the big kind of turning point, like, narratively, of, like, the stakes getting higher is when the fucking Russian woman gets killed.
Yes.
Because she's the first woman to be executed.
Yes.
And you need Cell Block Tango to set that up.
Yes. Also...
I once saw this... this movie was once described by the Plain Dealer movie reviewer, Mark Davidinsky, to me personally, as... a movie where there's only one innocent person and she dies.
Yes. Yeah. So, okay. So this movie mostly follows Roxy Hart, who is a dreamer. She wants to be a big singer, dancer, flapper lady.
And Obama's going to make that happen.
Yeah. And Obama's going to make that happen.
His dreamer act.
Yeah. She wants to be a cabaret star, I guess. It's not exactly explicit what her act is, but...
She wants to, like, sing and dance. And...
But also, like, kind of tell jokes. Like, she just wants to have an act.
Yeah, she wants to be a hot woman on stage people like.
Yeah. And she's cheating on her husband with...
John C. Reilly.
Yes, her husband John C. Reilly. With a dude who sells
Amos?
Furniture. Amos.
What's the name that Billy Flynn always calls him by?
Andy.
Yeah, because he always gets his name. Except the one time he does, and then as soon as he gets what he wants, immediately goes back to calling him Andy. Billy Flynn's one of my favorite fucking characters of like all time. I fucking adore this awful, awful man who in the end does a fucking master play and gets two people off death row.
Of course your favorite character is
he made me want to be a lawyer.
He's the amoral, slimy lawyer.
He's the, what's the guy, Richard Jean, right?
Richard Gere. So Roxy kills her affair partner because he's been lying to her about getting her into the club, right?
Yeah.
Because he just made a deal with the trombonist that he could bang her.
Yeah. A bet.
Yes, sorry. And so she shoots him dead. She convinces John C. Reilly to lie for her. And then the moment the police says, by the way, your wife's been cheating on you, John C. Reilly sells her out immediately. But then sticks by her. It's John C. Reilly.
He plays
understand.
The original simp.
I understand. Yes. I understand that Mr. Cellophane literally lays out his entire character, but he's such a pushover until he isn't, until he is.
Yeah. He he stopped. He gets a little like boost from being a pushover to being, well, he's a sad sack of shit, and then he gets his character arc is learning to grow from being a sad sack of shit to just being a pushover.
Yeah.
He does not go very
high. Yeah, because Richard Gere lies to him that he's the father of the baby, but mm-hmm. there is no baby. But
there's like two main men in this movie, and one is just a complete pushover, and the other is a pusher.
Once Fred's dead, it's the lawyer and Amos.
Yeah. Billy Flynn.
Yeah, so Roxy is sent to a women's prison, specifically the murderous division, or the murderous hall.
I like to imagine that, you know, there's this whole fucking, like, cell block tango happening, it's this whole fucking musical number, and, like, a few blocks over, there's someone who, like, committed tax fraud, and they're like, I just want to fucking sleep. But I can't, because the fucking murderous division keeps having musical numbers.
I mean... So, okay, in my head, they were, like, wings. That there were just so many that, like, they keep the murderesses yeah, yeah. completely separate from the others. So, I mean, yes, Cell Block Tango was very loud. You could hear it. But I'm just like, in my head, it wouldn't be really keeping
it's
them
someone,
up.
It's someone, like, crying in bed. And it's like, tap, stamp, stamp. If you would have been there. It's like, oh, I just fucking committed light tax fraud. I'm in here for, like, 4 months.
So, at this women's, at also at this women's prison is, Velma, who Catherine Zeta-Jones plays, who murdered her twin sister and husband because they were cheating, like her husband was cheating on her with her twin sister, and her twin sister had a double act with her at the cabaret.
Which I don't understand why he did that.
Why he cheated?
Because they're like twin sisters. Like, what are you? You can't be like, oh, he's a horn dog who wants a hotter woman. Like, what's he doing there?
Maybe he likes the personality of the sister. Maybe they were drunk and just fool around all the time.
Maybe he thought that was his wife.
That is a distinct possibility. According to the song, she did only catch them once. And
I'm just saying, if I fucking married Catherine Zeta-Jones as a murderous slapper, there'd be no cheating for me, sir.
Ideally, if you marry anyone, there would be no cheating for you.
Yeah, but, you know, just making emphasis at this point, like, what am I going to do? Like, oh, look, there's someone, look at her.
Liz, yeah. Cheating aside, we all have our own thoughts on whatever. Anyway, this prison is run by Queen Latifah.
Yeah. And we're not going to address it. That's it. That's all we're telling you. You got to see the movie to learn more. We're not expanding on the point. We're not going to elaborate on the statement that the prison is run by Queen Latifah.
I'm fine with it.
The prison's run by Queen Latifah.
Yeah, she's Mama.
She's there.
And yeah, you do what Mama wants, and you do Mama favors, and Mama does favors for you. And then Richard Gere plays the a complete and utter slime ball as a lawyer who is representing Catherine Zeta-Jones, and then eventually
he represents murderous women, and he's never lost a case.
He has never lost a case with women.
Yeah.
That does imply he has lost a case with men.
I think
that is defending a man is about murder is probably far more difficult than defending a woman.
And I think I assume he just kind of helps women. He just kind of does women cases.
Like when John C. Reilly calls him on the phone and it comes with the $2,000. Richard Gere's like, I asked you one question. I didn't ask if she was innocent. I didn't ask, like, if she was moral. I asked if you had $5,000.
Which is, like, halfway to actually, I think, being a good. It's because that attitude initially, everything he doesn't pursue that attitude bad, but being like, I don't care if my... Because really, a lawyer shouldn't care if they're...
Sure. Yeah, correct.
Their
client
is, like, innocent or guilty. Your job's only to fucking defend them.
Yeah, correct.
I also like that, like, it's not really implied that he fucks any of these women.
No.
And I love that he's this, like, slime ball lawyer, and you're like, oh, so he fucks the... No, he's just...
No, like, when Roxy offers her body as payment, he's immediately like, good, you got that out of your system.
Yeah.
Like
the man truly is like, if you murdered someone as a woman, a fantastic lawyer. He's like, give me the money and I'll get, like, always like, I just want money and I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure you're free.
Yeah. Because the courtroom to him is the cabaret stage.
Yeah. You gotta give him the razzle dazzle.
You gotta give him the razzle dazzle.
Like, I like that as much as he is like this kind of like unethical, lying, manipulative lawyer. It's not like obviously it's for personal gain for wealth, but it's not really beyond just like, I'm a high paying lawyer and I'm gonna do my job.
Yeah, 100%.
I think that's such a fun, interesting way, because you could have made it easily just like in so different ways, but just being like, oh, I mean, he's a piece of shit, but like, it's solely because, in like, I'm going to get my client off. Like, that's all he cares about. Is getting his client off and getting paid.
Yeah, I mean.
You could have made him a scumball in so many other ways. And it's like, no.
You could have turned him into a Russell Brand in Forgetting Sarah Marshall pretty easily.
But no, he's just, he'll just do anything to get his job done.
Yeah. Catherine Zeta-Jones is very famous. Roxy is not famous.
He attends the show at the end.
Yes, he does. Velma, yeah, Velma is famous. Roxy is not famous yet. And over time, that like Velma's fame goes down as Roxy's fame goes up, and then the two of them, there's like, so okay, so Roxy washed Velma's underwear in the laundry to like have an opportunity to talk to her, and Velma was rude, and then Mama offered to call Richard, to call Billy Flynn for $100. And over the course of the movie, people start to care, because Billy Flynn is good at his job.
Yeah.
People start to care about Roxy, this woman who was swallowed up by the nightlife. So their fame like goes all wobbly, especially when you include the Hungarian woman who didn't kill her husband, who may have killed her husband, but probably didn't kill her husband, because in Cell Block Tango, they all admit it. Yeah. They're like, we murdered them,
no,
but
Cell
it
Block
wasn't
Tango
a crime. It was a murder, but not a crime.
Makes her clear that she did not kill her husband.
And then, yeah, she's like,
she doesn't have any of the red. She doesn't have any of the red stuff. Like, it's...
Right, and she has the white flag,
and the red stuff is the spiritual marking of the soul.
Yes,
because it's the stage world.
But because she's foreign, she's uneducated, and she doesn't have the money, she's the first woman in Cook County to ever be hanged.
She doesn't speak English, and it's really easy to prosecute someone when they don't know how to speak English
in America. Yeah. Yes, when they don't speak, it's really easy to like make them say whatever you want them to say.
If I went to France, I'd be fucked. I don't know how to speak French.
I mean, they speak English, most of
them. They choose not to.
They could. You're
choose snooty.
Sure. It's all about the rise and fall of fame and how it's evil and it like swallows up people, but also like
that dangerous women are hot as shit.
This movie kind of does like emphasize that thesis. We mentioned earlier, but there is no baby, but when Catherine Zeta-Jones, when Roxy's star is starting to wane, because of it's her star starts to wane when she's no longer the first hanging, right? Or does it start to wane before that?
It starts to wane with... It starts to wane more with, like, Velma's trial.
Sure. Because the press kind of, like, goes between the two. And it's whoever happens to be in the press at any given moment.
Because that's how Billy Flynn takes advantage of all the press talking about Velma. By doing his little tricky
by dance showing thing. Him the razzle dazzle.
By showing him the razzle dazzle.
By
saying something that is not a lie.
Yes.
I'm flashing ahead because I like this. Because she's testifying in like Roxy's trial.
Yep.
Because that she found her diary. Like she's like, it proves that she murdered, and it sounds like a lawyer.
Yeah.
So he's like, so he's like, I'm just saying it's a bit fishy. That she received it from, she received a diary from someone who speaks like a lawyer that she doesn't know, who also had a copy of, because he's trying to pin it on like the
tech, yeah,
the DA,
yeah, yeah,
who had asked for like writing from Roxy. He's like, who also had a sample of my client's handwriting. Doesn't that sound suspicious? And all those things are 100% true.
Yeah,
that was sent to her by a person who has a copy of his client's handwriting.
And at no point is his argument she didn't kill him.
Yeah,
the only thing that he absolutely lies about is that they both went for the gun.
Yeah,
like his whole case of woman swallowed up by the nightlife. And
yeah, he's trying to make it self-defense.
Yeah, forced to cheat, blah blah blah. Like all of everything led into that moment is pretty
he does the good thing with lying where it's mostly true.
Yes.
He's like, no, like she definitely received a copy of this diary from someone who has a client, my client's handwriting, speaks like a lawyer. Sounds like the DA, right? And then she definitely like shot him, but it was self-defense.
And even like Catherine, when he asks, like Catherine Zeta-Jones is just like, that's just what I was told to say. Like it was, her entire thing crumbles. So Catherine Zeta-Jones, Velma, only testifies in the Roxy case because she's jealous of Roxy's fame.
Yeah.
Also, while Roxy is
and
becoming,
to get a plea deal.
Yes, and to get a plea deal. And while Roxy is being, now that Roxy's semi-famous, Velma wants to do a double act with her to like buddy buddy when we both get out of this. But because she was like very rude and snooty in the beginning when Roxy had nothing to offer, Roxy's become way more like fame hungry, selfish, and is like, I'm a star all on my own.
They do end up having a double act because again, Billy Flynn gets both his clients off.
Yeah,
because she already has the plea deal, so he just does that to discredit Roxy. Case
is truly it. Also, I'm not a lawyer. I actually don't know how real law works. I know that in TV and movie law that stuff kind of works. Doesn't the defense, when they have like special evidence and you have to like admit something into the court, don't they usually get like a day to go over it?
Yeah, no, you any evidence put into court you have to see beforehand, like both sides have to see beforehand.
Yeah,
you can't do surprise witness or surprise
right testimony. That's what I was gonna say. And I know that it's very easy to get like a photo in court. You just have to know the right words, but like they have to know that photo exists before you try and administer it into evidence. So I don't know. It makes for a great scene. It makes for fun. Truly, if this was more realistic, it would be boring. However,
I will argue that technically Billy Flynn was aware of the evidence,
but not in the court, like, anyway, so he gets both of them off. The Hungarian lady is hung. We don't know what happens to any of the other cell block tango people. At one point, while Roxy Starr is starting to fade, she fakes being pregnant.
By fucking a doctor.
Yes. But also, maybe it's Amos's baby, but it's not. So the way that it all lined up, it could never have been Amos's baby. And then he, like, smooth, seersuckered southern suited his way into, like, snake oil salesmaning that he believes it could have been Amos's baby.
You're making it sound like he did really cool mental gymnastics. He just kind of said, is it your baby? No, it's not your baby. I don't think so. Are you sure? I'm not sure. So you're not sure? No? So it's your baby? What? He just kind of like said words at him, and he got really confused. He talks like, is it your baby? It might be. I don't think so. It's not my baby? Might be. It might be my baby? Yes. It's my baby? No.
And but according to the police evidence, they had not been intimate in the time period. But he's like, I don't believe the police evidence. Do you believe the police evidence? And he's like, I don't know if I believe the police evidence. You're telling me you slipped by this beautiful dame and you didn't make a move? And it's like, it was just, he didn't weasel his way, whatever.
You describe things like,
he razzle-dazzled him.
He 100% razzle-dazzled, but even out of his full razzle dazzle, like normally he has to be like, oh, these people are intelligent. He just kind of went, hey, you're not too sprite. I'm gonna just talk circles around, like really easy circles around.
Yeah. And this whole thing, Billy Flynn calls Amos Andy because he doesn't care about him as a person, so he's not committing his name to memory. The one time he calls him Amos is on the stand when he needs the confession, and then immediately calls him Andy again. But also, Roxy doesn't really care about Andy anymore. Roxy's angry at Andy Amos for double crossing, like being disloyal in his confession. Again, Mr. Cellophane, maybe the best number in the entire show. I love it so much. Is a clown.
Yeah, I was about to ask.
Is a clown. Is creepy. The song is good enough and the performance is good enough that I deal with it. Is creepy. Is a clown.
So if
did not like it.
So if a clown performs well enough in a musical number, it can allay the clownness.
As long as the clown is far away, sure.
Like if you're out walking at night in the city and a clown,
if
a clown comes out, right, and you're like, oh fuck, but then the clown does like a really fucking good,
no,
let me finish, does a really good cover of like a Weezer song.
Sure, no.
You're going to be like, I'm not pissing myself. Just stay away.
No, I am running away. If a clown were in here right now performing Only in Dreams, and it's a fantastic, and it's the two of us, and there's a clown right where your TV is, I am walking. I am running away.
Well, I want to test that. So I brought Billy Bonkers. Get out of here.
However, if we are in,
what did he do? I had a clown in my room. I just called him. I planned. I'm like, he's gonna bring up the clown and Mr. Cellophane. Billy Bonkers, you gotta hide under my bed.
I would cry. I would run away.
And he comes out. He's like, oh, hello there, Harrison. Boop boop.
I would piss myself. Not a joke. I might have a panic attack seizure on the ground.
So there's like this thing. There's this thing that's happening in dating apps where there's a lot of like clown women in my experience.
Yeah, sure. And it's like, a growing industry.
I'm just like, oh man. Every time I see it, I just think of you.
Yeah.
Like I was never gonna swipe on these women to begin with, but I'm like, can't be doing my homie dirty like this. Can't be fucking that clussy and doing my homie dirty like this.
But is a clown. Honestly, if we were mezzanine seats at the Palace Theater, maybe I could probably be a front row seats at the Palace Theater. I'm freaking out. I might not be walking away. I might not be causing a scene, but I am internally freaking out. Mezzanine, we're probably okay. However, is a clown, is creepy, is the best number in the show. John C. Reilly can actually carry a tune. It's also a very simple number. Like, it doesn't, a lot of the performances are like, a lot of the performances are like vocal heavy. There are moments where they're like razzle-dazzly vocal heavy. Mr. Cellophane is very simple.
Yeah.
It's just a very simple song executed very well. But he gets both the women off. They they do a duo act where they go to the big theater and they put on a giant show.
And all their friends come.
Queen they bring
Latifah
out like
and Billy Flynn.
They bring out like fake inflatable guns as like, haha,
it's
we're
one
the
of my
murder
favorite
women.
Shots is they're like, haha, we murdered men. And Billy Flynn's like, fuck, these women are funny.
Truly, that's one of my favorite shots of the whole movie.
I do also like, because there's like, it's like, you know, Billy Flynn might not like super care about these people, but he cares enough to be like, hey, want to come to our show? Yeah, I'm supporting.
Yeah.
I'm free.
Mama's there. Mama took a day off work. Like,
I imagine Billy Flynn's probably, if you like an actual personal friend of Billy Flynn, probably having a great time.
Yeah,
he seems like a fun guy.
But yeah, that's the general plot of Chicago. Yeah.
It's not twisty,
that
turvy.
Yeah, it's not really that intricate.
It's a musical plot.
Yeah, Queen Latifah bothered me at first, and John C. Reilly bothered me at first, and then both of them midway through their number, or like after.
I think John C. Reilly bothers you because the character of Amos is supposed to bother you a bit.
John C. Reilly bothers me because at first I see John C. Reilly in a way that I don't, whatever. But then, like, the moment he's in the office, I was like, oh, that's the character now. Like, it took me a second to get used to him. Mama, it was about halfway through her number where I was on the couch watching and I'm like, ugh, this is Queen Latifah. Not like, ugh, this is Queen Latifah, but like,
see, I don't have a lot of Queen Latifah background, so.
No, like, I enjoy Queen Latifah as an actress, as a musician. I have not listened to all of her records, but I've seen this, and I like her in this, I like her in Hairspray, I've listened to a couple of her rap records. Like, she's a very talented woman, but it was one of those, like, this could have gone to, like an upstart character or like a character actor, like an upstart actor. I feel very similarly. I love Baz Luhrmann's Gatsby movie. I feel very similarly about the Tobey Maguire part. That should have gone to a no-name actor. That's the kind of part that someone is supposed to shine in, and it makes them a star. Like, Mama is a role that, like, it's someone is supposed to shine in and it makes them a star instead of just already casting a star. With that being said, Queen Latifah kills it.
She's really good in this.
No one in this movie does poorly. I think it's a very basic story with very basic filmmaking techniques executed pretty well.
Yeah.
I have nothing, like, it has a couple moments that I love. I think it's a little too slow for its own good. With that being said, whatever. Like, it didn't bug me near enough to, like, actually be a point against it. I just think there were a couple moments, especially toward the back half.
Yeah.
If you trimmed this back half and you got a cool, like, 145, this movie would be near perfect. But no, I liked this movie quite a bit. There were a couple, like, filmmakery things in the beginning, more in All That Jazz in the opening number, and then I got used to it as it went on. But there were a couple shots where it was, like, cutting between, but they tried to do the, like, let me cut to, like, four things at once kind of thing, where I don't think it quite executes it on the level that was in the director's head.
That's kind of what it's like being in Chicago.
As much as I earlier mentioned that, like, I did not initially like the Queen Latifah casting, I do think she is perfect in this role.
Yeah.
I think she might be the best performance in this movie. Think? It's her. John C. Reilly has the best performing moment, but I think as a performance, I think it's Queen Latifah as Mama.
I'm really into the simmering rage that Catherine Zeta-Jones brings to All That Jazz, and more specifically, Cell Block Tango.
Sure. I think Catherine Zeta-Jones has some excellent moments.
Her stompy. I'm going to call her a stompy energy because she stomps a lot.
I don't think anyone in this movie's bad.
Cell Block Tango, not all productions have that, like, rage behind it, but she brings, like, a truly, like, angry version.
Yeah. I think our three leads are excellent, but I also think they're giving very, like, bland and basic are the not word. Straightforward. They're giving very straightforward performances for the part they are given. Well, I do feel like Mama could, like, there were a like, could have gone in a, like, more dictatorial direction or more of a, like, scummy direction. But I think that Queen Latifah bringing a true, I'm out for me, however, like, I don't care about you, but I care enough about you that I don't want harm upon you. Like, her performance could have been very cartoony very quickly, yeah. And I think she toes that line perfectly. Same with John C. Reilly. I think he's a little bit more of a character, like a cartoon, in the beginning. He becomes more and more of a believable character as it goes on. It's very simple filmmaking. I don't think it fully nails all of the techniques that it tries, but I think it's one of those, I get what you're going for, so I'm not gonna count it too hard against you, because you execute it well enough that, like, you got across what was in your head. It just did not translate.
I mean,
the same
honestly
way.
The puppet scene makes up for any shortcomings.
The puppet scene and Mr. Cellophane make up for
the
all
puppet
of it. And
scene,
Mama's
the
scene.
Puppet scene thing is again my favorite adaptation of something. It does so well. It'd be so hard to do on stage.
Mama's intro number is
all the journalists when they're
so fantastic. Yeah. Yeah.
The gun. And he's like.
And the gun. They both reach for the gun.
Like, shout outs to all the extras in this team. Yeah. The way that they're synchronized marionetic is like.
Yes.
That is.
Is really well done.
That had to be several takes, but that is fucking perfect. The way they slowly start rising up.
Yeah.
Because they rise up and they fall down a bit. Then they rise up and they fall down a bit. I'm like, ooh.
Yeah. Earlier, I compared this to the Rent movie a little bit. I think Rob Marshall Chicago is a different musical, obviously, blah, blah, blah. I think Rob Marshall understands Chicago better than Chris Columbus understood Rent. There are moments in Rent. I have seen Rent live, like professionally, 6 or 7 times. I love that musical. It's also very flawed and like it's rough around the edges, and that's also kind of the things I like about it. There are moments in Rent where I watch the way that he frames shots and like the way that he like, and I'm like, what you're visually showing is the exact opposite of what this song is about. And it's frustrating. I do think Chicago, the numbers are a little more straightforward, so it's a little easier to like adapt them, yeah. But choreograph them, I guess. But no, this movie, I also don't hate the Rent movie, but this movie does better than the Rent movie does. And I don't know why I keep comparing them. I think it's just because they both have Taye Diggs. They came out within like 2 years of each other. And
Rent's your musical touchdown.
And Rent is my musical touchdown. I love Rent. Do you have any thoughts on like what this movie has to say about fame or like what the toxic nature of fame?
I think it's right that fame is toxic and it's also something you should chase at all costs.
So you agree with this movie's thesis?
I agree with this movie's thesis completely.
Okay.
Like I think that to want to be famous and be like, but not like Chicago. You shouldn't want to be famous. I think there's some things in life that if you want to pursue, you have to understand that they're deeply toxic on many levels. Yeah. I think it does this is what being famous is.
And I think that's where we're coming at it differently, because I don't want to be famous. I want to perform. And those are two different things. And yes, fame sometimes comes as a byproduct of performance.
Well, we were talking about this earlier where like I can get my creative impulses out. Not in the public view, like painting,
sure.
doing little art projects, painting my little men, telling stories to my friends. That fulfills the need to be creative for me.
Yeah, that doesn't for me.
The only thing that performing feeds is fame, which is the only thing that I want out of it. Because like, I don't need people on stage to like my art to feel creatively fulfilled. Like, that is a very self-sustaining thing for me. I do need them to love me.
I understand that. I don't need them to necessarily like my art to be fulfilled. Obviously, I prefer they do. And like,
I could draw doodles on napkins. But... And all those little doodles I draw at Ken on napkins are people creatively fulfilled me.
That didn't, yeah.
Little doodle and someone really likes it and laughs at it, creatively fulfilled. Sure. I don't need crowds to see it. I do need crowds to chant my name.
Yeah, and I think that's just that's where we're coming at it from different angles.
Yeah.
We both agree that fame is toxic, and I don't think it's worth chasing, and you think it's worth chasing.
No,
at all
points. Most things worth chasing are toxic. Fame, toxic women.
Okay.
By their very nature. Sure. I've been on the dating apps a lot recently, and there's a lot of women who I'm like, you are insane in a toxic way. You're getting a swipe from me, as opposed to like, you are insane in a non-toxic way. Like, it's toxic, but it's not like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, you are not going to, you are just legitimately insane. There's people I'm like, you seem a bit grody. You seem a bit blackened of the soul. A swipe from me. I like a mean little toxic woman.
You mentioned earlier. Yeah, the whole time I'm watching this, I'm like, this is Matthew's dream woman. Like,
it's my dream. Well, Catherine Zeta-Jones in this movie.
Velma is your dream woman.
It's her and Marissa Tomei and my cousin Vinny. If you understand both those women, you know exactly what I'm into.
Yeah. yes, I do. We've gotten a handful of thoughts out. I don't know if I have I probably do if I could check my notes, but I don't
we
have my notes
bring
on
back
me
flapper
right now.
Fashion.
Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts, I guess,
bring
before
back
we
flapper
devolve
fashion,
into madness?
Be a toxic woman.
Those are your two final thoughts?
Yeah. And, you know, being a lawyer seems really cool.
All right. Watch this movie, I guess. Yep. If here's the thing. If you're not a musical guy, this movie isn't going to change your mind. It is very much a musical movie and is very much in love with being a musical movie. It isn't going to change your mind. If you are a musical guy, this is going to be right up your alley, probably. That's probably about it.
Watch Razzle Dazzle and take its lessons to heart.
Okay, and on
there's
that
so
note,
many times I'm going through life I'm about to do something and I sing to myself softly, razzle dazzle.
I saw
this movie at a formative age, and like razzle dazzle really taught me a lot about life. I went to the hard knock school of razzle dazzle as a youth, and I really learned everything I need to know.
All right.
You know, because you're gonna go through life, you know, and times are tough. You know, and you're going to run into trouble.
Yeah.
And you just got to remember, but how can they see when they have sequins in their eyes, you know?
Do you want to do socials?
Yeah, I'll do socials. But yeah, you can find me at Midwest_Magician, where you can see my creative output of Small Little Men. I have no other social medias for you to follow. But you can follow the show at Two Men and a Movie on YouTube. And Two Men Movie Podcast on Instagram. If you want to send us your fan fictions.
Yeah. Do you have any ex-reader from this that you
I
want?
I mean, obviously fucking
Velma. Velma. You want Velma X Matthew?
I'll take Velma. I will take a Roxy. I mean, I'll take any ex-reader. It's very hard to find good ex-reader.
So right now, we're looking for Cora.
Cora.
We're looking for Mary.
We're looking for Mary Sinners.
Mary Sinners, and we're looking for Velma.
Yeah, those are the three I will pay for.
Okay.
And you can send those to twomenmoviepodcast@gmail.com. Also, obviously include Venmo. You will not be paid if it's Cash App. I refuse to use Cash App. It will have to be Venmo or PayPal. But I will send you $5.
You can find me on Instagram, Threads, TikTok, and Lemonade under harrisonpoole.com, harrisonpoole.com. And you can follow me on Letterboxd at hdpoole124. Thank you so much to Tristan Hostetter for our theme music. Thank you guys for listening. Honestly, yeah, tune in next week for all that jazz. We're going back to the old formula where my movies are a reaction to his movies.
You're a reaction.
All right, so long and good night.
Hugs and kisses.
This is Matthew and Harrison's Two Men in a Movie. It's not what it sounds like.